Has everyone taken their seats? Okay, so we can continue our program. Our next guest is Rayath Al-Madhoun. He has had quite a few drinks. Which is good. Welcome, Rayath. Give him an applause. Rayath is a poet. You're still young, 35 years old. When I was in Damascus, there was a place in a hotel, in the basement of a hotel. Very smoky, a lot of drinks, a lot of arak. It was called Bayt al-Qasid.
The House of Poetry.
The House of Poetry. Would you happen to share something about this?
This is Luqman Derki and me. We did this, but you can't put me in this subject, because if I went outside the project, anyone could take my place. Anyone. But if Luqman Derki went outside the project, no one could fit. So it's the project of Luqman. He's the one-man show. I was making the list, the guests, the everything about poetry, the real things.
But what was it? Except a lot of drinking.
They wrote about it in the New York Times and like this. It was really special things. We began in Mustafa Ali in the Jewish area of the old city in Damascus for 2 years. Every week from 7 o'clock in the evening to 7 o'clock in the morning, people come to drink and listen to poetry, and then we stop it for 1 year, and then we move it to the center, to the Ferdows Tower, and we continue many years until I left to Sweden, and then they continue until the revolution began. And I think I didn't hear that there's another place like this in the world, so people could make every week reading, stay all the night listening to poetry and enjoy themselves and smoke.
And the Secret Service was okay with this?
No, but it is. You should know something about the Syrian regime. It's a little different than Pinochet or Franco or Joseph Stalin or all the dictator you know. He is dealing with the things in different way. So he have no problem with the metaphors.
No, he's too stupid to understand.
No. He is more clear. For example, he didn't shut down the internet like the old regime do. He's working in different way. During my life in Syria, I was from a group of Palestinians who didn't have any human rights. We came in 1967. We are a small group, around 5,000. We didn't have even paper. We're not allowed to inherit it. We're not allowed to own house. We're not allowed to work. We're not allowed to have drive lessons. We're not allowed to travel. If we travel, we're not allowed to come back. And they call us the people of Gaza. The rest of Palestinians, they are 700,000, they have all the right. From that moment, I began to study in my life my situation from my childhood and to see, I have not been in the prison, never, because I understand the rules of this very brutal regime. He work in very different way. He's alive, like a bacteria. He move, he could work with the things, deal with the writers, deal with the culture things, with the mosques, with the church. He's under the table, up the table. He's clean for most of the European. He's the most open society. Oh, why they make revolution, these people? He's bombing 650 cities from 4 years, every day. And all the people, no one takes stand. He is so clever. 8 months of peaceful revolution. No one takes stand with us, because they think jihadist. And then he opened the borders. He let all the Al-Qaeda prisoners free, 2,500 prisoners in Syria, let him free. He make the West afraid. He know that the West afraid from the Islamophobia. He understand your mentality. He is really clever person. So from that moment, most of the people who was dealing with the regime, they fall down. But the real poets, they survived. The real novelists, they survived. The painters, the people who work with the creativity, they survived for two reasons. It's impossible to be creative and stupid, and because the metaphor. Because that after I left Syria to Sweden, I stopped using metaphor. I really hate it. It was something we needed to survive. Now I say the things more clear in direct way. If I run away from the question, but this is what I can say.
Okay. Well, I think it's a clear answer. Thank you for that. So you just mentioned you're a Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
So you are actually a double refugee. You sought asylum in Sweden in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you relate to the country of your father, Palestine, the country that you were born in, Syria, and the country that you live in now?
Listen, my father, he's from Ashkelon. He was 6 months when Israel occupied Ashkelon and they throw him with his family to Gaza. He grew up in Palestinian refugee camp, it's named Khan Yunis. In 1967, he was 18. When they occupied Gaza, they arrested him with my uncle and they throw him to Egypt. They didn't throw my grandmother. She didn't see him until she died 2 years ago. She was alone all her life. I spoke with her after I came to Sweden because there is no communication between Gaza and Syria. So after I came to Sweden, it was the first time I called my grandmother. Yes, I am a Palestinian, 100%, but you should know something really important. I inherited my father's memories, but my memories itself, it's Syrian. Any Israeli have memory in Palestine more than me, but this will not change anything. Ben-Gurion say the second generation will forget, the third generation will die. This is not true. We have the same mentality. We have the same father, Abraham. If they didn't forget in 2,000 years, we will not forget in 70 years. I'm a Palestinian until I have the right to decide. When I have the right to decide, maybe I will decide to be Swedish. So this is my right. My memory is Syrian and my fact is Swedish. So if I go to Palestine, they call me the Syrian Swedish. In Syria now, they call me the Palestinian Swedish. In Sweden, they call me the Syrian Palestinian. And this is really important for creativity, what we call exile. Did you ask yourself how it will be the life without exile, how it will be the life of Brecht and Hannah Arendt, or all these people you are proud of? Why some writers, they choose to be in exile, the voluntary exile? Because the life in parallel open your mind to see the things from different angles. I am not Swedish, and I will not be Swedish. And if I go back to Syria now, I will find myself stranger. But I live in a way, in a parallel, that really I enjoy. And I will be a big liar if I say I didn't enjoy my life as immigrant in Europe. Because I can judge the things in a poetic way. And I am a poet, so it's okay.
Maybe I can follow up on these latest remarks, because I talked, at least my wife talked, to a friend of yours today on Facebook, and I asked him to formulate a question.
Mm-hmm.
So he did, and we'll go in Arabic first.
Who is
and
he?
Hassan Ibrahim,
uh-huh.
Known by the name Molotov.
Yeah. I didn't meet him from 2008, and I hear that he got bullet in his leg.
So I will start in Arabic with this question, yeah? هل كان موت قدمك الجديد السويد حنونا وملهما كما كان دمشق بياسمينها ونسائها اللواتي يحتملن نسقنا بحجة أننا شعراء. Is your Swedish footstep as nice and inspirational as Damascus with the flower of Yasmin and her women that could deal with us, with our moodiness, because we were poets?
I know what he means, because he know my ex-girlfriend in Damascus. No one can forgive you ever for something. No, I really miss him. I didn't. No, he know my ex, and he know how she was really great woman, and forgive me. In that time, I was really thinking that I'm feminist. I was really, like, I was believing that I'm a feminist. And then after I arrived to Sweden and like this, I was sitting with my friend and I told him, oh, you know, I'm a feminist. He told me, you a feminist? You are a macho. It was like shock for me. I told him, what you mean about you? I'm a real feminist fighter for women. They told me, no, you are so patriarch.
But I think his question is...
So this woman, she was really suffering a lot with with the poet, yeah. No, I don't think that, I don't think Stockholm could make me go back to that kind of life. I'm a little different now. And I really in love with Damascus. Is my dream, really. It is the best city. But I don't want it as it was. I remember the last look I looked to Damascus from the plane at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I understand that this city will go to hell, like all the cities end in a dictatorship. And I think only about not what will happen now. I'm thinking about the future after 100 years. We have the right to pay the price of the freedom like the European did. And I want them to take our stand, even if the result will be so bad in this time. But all of us, we should say no for the dictatorship. All of us, like, we should take this stand. So if I want Damascus, yes, but I don't want it like before. And I don't want it quickly. It takes 2 years, 200 years with the French Revolution or more. What I want that the people not hesitate to stand with the Syrian when they decided to be free like you. They have the right to have this. So it doesn't matter what's going on now. The destruction in the country, we didn't that. We didn't do that. The regime did that. So what we are afraid from what now? For our family, he killed them. 200 of my friends have been killed. For the buildings, he destroyed them. For women, he raped them, systematic rape. What we are afraid for? Let's take the freedom. Let's take him away. Finish from the dictatorship, khalas. So this is what I want. I want to see Damascus as I see Amsterdam.
Thank you, Reyes. I have a lot of questions. However, what we do not have is time. So I would suggest that you would start and recite and read some of your poems.
Yes.
So the floor is yours.
Thank you. تفاصيل لقد بعت أيامي البيضاء في السوق السوداء واشتريت منزلا يطل على الحرب لقد كانت الإطلالة رائعة لدرجة أنني لم أقاوم إغراءها فانحرفت قصيدتي عن تعاليم الشيخ واتهمني أصدقائي بالعزلة وضعت كحلا على عيني فازدادت عروبتي وشربت حليب الناقة في الحلم فصحوت شاعرا كنت أراقب الحرب كما يراقب المصابون بالجذام عيون الناس ولقد توصلت إلى حقائق مرعبة عن الشعر والرجل الأبيض عن موسم الهجرة إلى أوروبا وعن المدن التي تستقبل السياح في أيام السلم والمجاهدين في أيام الحرب عن النساء اللواتي يعانين الأمرين في أيام السلم ويصبحن وقودا للحرب في أيام الحرب في مدينة أعيد إعمارها مثل برلين يكمن السر الذي يعرفه الجميع وهو أن لن أكرر ما هو معروف لكنني سأخبركم بما لا تعرفون ليست مشكلة الحرب في من يموتون مشكلتها في من يبقون أحياء بعدها لقد كانت أجمل حرب خضتها في حياتي مليئة بالمجازات والصور الشعرية أتذكر كيف أنني كنت أتعرق أدرينالينا وأبول دخانا أسودا كيف كنت آكل لحمي وأشرب صراخا كان الموت بجسده الهزيل يتكئ على ما اقترفت قصيدته من خراب ويمسح سكينه من ملحي وكانت المدينة
تفرك حذائي بمسائها فيبتسم الطريق، وتعد أصابع حزني وتسقطها في الطريق إليها. الموت يبكي والمدينة تتذكر ملامح قاتلها وترسل لي طعنة عن طريق البريد، تهددني بالفرح وتنشر قلبي على حبل غسيلها الممدود بين ذاكرتين. وأنا يشدني النسيان إلي عميقا، إلي عميقا، فتسقط لغتي على الصباح، تسقط الشرفات على الأغاني، المناديل على القبلات، الشوارع الخلفية على أجساد النساء، تفاصيل الأزقة على التاريخ، تسقط المدينة على المقابر، الأحلام على السجون، الفقراء على الفرح، وأنا أسقط على الذكرى تماما، كما لو أنك تأكل أصابع حبيبتك، تماما كما لو أنك ترضع سلك الكهرباء، كما لو أنك تأخذ لقاحا ضد الشظايا، كما لو أنك لص ذكريات. تعال لنمسك عن الشعر ونستبدل أغنيات الصيف بشاش طبي، وقصائد الحصاد بخيطان العمليات الجراحية، واترك مطبخك وغرفة الأطفال واتبعني لنشرب الشاي خلف أكياس الرمل. إن المجزرة تتسع للجميع، ضع أحلامك في السقيفة واسق نباتات الشرفة جيدا، فقد يطول النقاش مع الحديد. اترك خلفك جلال الدين الرومي وابن رشد وهيجل، واجلب معك ميكافيلي وهنتينغتون وفوكوياما، فنحن نحتاجهم الآن. اترك ضحكاتك وقميصك الأزرق وسريرك الدافئ، وهات أظافرك وأنيابك وسكين الصيد، وتعال ارمي عصر النهضة واجلب محاكم التفتيش، ارمي حضارة أوروبا واجلب ليلة الكريستال، ارمي الاشتراكية واجلب جوزيف ستالين، ارمي قصائد رامبو واجلب تجارة الرقيق، ارمي ميشيل فوكو واجلب فيروس الإيدز، ارمي فلسفة هايدغر واجلب نقاء العرق الآري، ارمي شمس همينغواي التي لا تزال تشرق واجلب رصاصة في الرأس، ارمي ليلة فان جوخ المضيئة بالنجوم واجلب أذنه المقطوعة، ارمي غورنيكا بيكاسو واجلب غورنيكا الحقيقية برائحة دمها الطازج. نحن نحتاج هذه الأشياء الآن، نحتاجها كي نبدأ الاحتفال.
Thank you, Riyaz.
Thank you.
And now we move on to our final guest, Nihad Siris. If he could come forward. Ah, he is already there. And he will be interviewed by Juko Popinga, his translator.